Welcome to the You Love and You Learn podcast, the place to learn about all things love, relationships, relationship anxiety, and to deconstruct the one-size-fits-all narrative of what it means to be in a happy relationship. I'm your host, Sarah Yudkin, a relationship anxiety coach who's on a mission to discuss the nuances of love and relationships that I wish someone would have shared with me years ago. My goal with each episode is for you to leave with an expanded definition of love and relationships and with practices to carry with you in your life and relationships on a day-to-day basis. I'm so grateful to have you here. Welcome back to the You Love and You Learn podcast. Thank you for being here. I'm excited to share today's conversation that I had with Kayla Licari, who is a physician associate turned coach that helps perfectionists conquer overwhelm in love and life. And oof, I feel like this topic is so relevant. And I know that perfectionism has kind of been a theme in many other episodes, but I truly think it's one of the biggest impacts on how we show up in our life and our relationship. So I'm really excited to bring you this conversation. Anyone who resonates with being a high achiever, puts the bar so high for yourself and others, you're gonna love this episode. And Kayla is a mother of three and has grown with her husband over 20 years, which is so cool. I love learning from people who have been in long-term relationships. And the reason why she's doing this work now is because she burnt out from overachieving and perfectionist loops that were ruining her marriage and ruining how she showed up in her life. And so she really dove deep into nervous system regulation, internal family systems, and somatic exercises to help herself and her clients have healthy relationships. And in today's conversation, we discuss five signals that perfectionism may be present in your relationship and life. So really excited to bring you this episode, and let's get into it. Hi, Kayla. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Hi, Sarah. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We did, I think now almost 5 or 6 months ago, time is flying, but we had done an IG live together that talked all about the ways that perfectionism can show up in our relationship and life and the ways that you have identified that you know that perfectionism is starting to be at play and affecting you. And so I really wanted to bring you on to the podcast so we could elaborate more on some of those concepts, because I know a lot of listeners, and myself included, really resonate with perfectionism being something that affects them in their day-to-day life and then inevitably our relationship. So thank you for being willing to share your wisdom on this.
Yeah, I'm happy to. Being with one person for roughly 20 years, you learn a lot along the way. So if I can take the struggles and the pain that we've been through, having been together from like 18 to 38, from being kids to raising kids, and share that information I've learned and make that easier for other couples, it really lights me up to be able to do that.
Yeah, 20 years. Wow. That is, I always look at the longevity of a relationship, and I don't think that's the only way to measure a relationship. Like, oh, it's been 20 years, so that means it's a good relationship. That's not the way to measure it by any means. But in just crossing 7 years, I just know that relationships take a lot of intentionality. And so I do really admire couples who have been able to navigate such a long period of time together. And on our IG live that we did, you mentioned that there were some challenging seasons with you and your husband of just navigating all of the discomforts of being human, but also being in a relationship with another imperfect human. So can you share a little bit more about your journey from 18 to 38, like you said, of just all the things that you've been through, not necessarily feeling like you have to share every little thing, but giving people a sense of how you can grow and evolve over that much time together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I love how you put it too, right? That's the biggest thing, is two imperfect people coming together. And the biggest challenge in a long-term relationship, because you're right, longevity doesn't mean that doesn't determine that you have a successful relationship. It's navigating who you are as you're growing together. And the biggest thing that came up for me recently too was we really never shied away from, I say, showing each other the ugly parts of ourselves, which isn't the nicest way of putting it, but it's really those younger versions of ourselves that are wounded and hurting. And we did a lot of that starting at age 18. So we met in college, and there was a lot of drinking involved at that point, which doesn't make it easy to regulate emotions and always handle situations very well. So we weren't the safest people for each other, I would say, in the sense that looking back, we had a lot of people that were definitely not rooting for us. They could see that there were a lot of unhealthy patterns between us. I didn't know back then, we were repeating a lot of what we kind of saw growing up, although we weren't aware of it. So there's a lot of emotional reactivity for me on my part. I can definitely say a lot of hysterical crying, a lot of fighting, because I went to college with the mindset that you go to college to do really well, to get a degree. I had just come from high school being valedictorian, very perfectionistic of me. And I'm like, you go to school, not to just have fun. Like, you can have a little bit of fun, but you go to get the degree because you want the things later in life. Well, my husband was a lot more in the present moment. He was a lot more, well, let's have fun. And so there was a lot of clashing. So we weren't always very kind to each other. I definitely would refer back to that time frame of dating in college. There was a lot of emotional abuse between the two of us with name calling and just really being unkind to each other at times. At that same time, again, being able to show those really vulnerable parts of yourself and not holding back those parts of yourself and having someone still accept you and love you and still work through those things is what kept us together, in my opinion, after college, leading into grad school, when I actually moved out of the state. And for me, looking back, I didn't realize what a big deal that was because I very much have had to overcome an anxious attachment with him, meaning I was very much a chaser, wanting to be loved. And I moved out of state to go to grad school, just trusting that the relationship was either going to work or it wasn't, despite all of our flaws and imperfections and a lot of arguing we did in college. And things worked out the way that they needed to. We got engaged, we got married, all those things. And things were pretty steady. And then when you enter kids, when kids came into the mix, a lot more stuff came to the surface that we had to navigate through. But again, being committed and never hiding parts of ourselves and still loving each other anyway through that, through both of our imperfections. For me personally, no one ever loved me like that. I never experienced that kind of acceptance of you show me your imperfections and I'm still not running. And that was huge.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. So what we're going to get into today is these signals or pillars of perfectionism. And you've shared five that you've noticed as signals either to slow down and pause and check in with yourself, or signals that, hey, I think my inner perfectionist or the part of me that's driven towards perfection is coming out right now. And so I'll just give a quick overview of what those five are so people know what we're going to talk about. But I'd love to go through each of them and have you share a little bit more about what these things mean for you, how they showed up in your life, and how they can show up in relationships so that people understand how to look for them in their own patterns. So the five pillars of perfectionism are control, judgment, resentment, fear, and prioritizing your needs last. So starting with control, what did that look like for you? Or what do you see most commonly when you're working with people? And how does control show up as a manifestation of perfectionism?
So control, so first in my dynamic, the thing that where I saw control happen the most would be trying to control the emotions between us, meaning if he was upset about something, I needed him to not be upset, because if he's upset about something, that means we're not okay. Mm-hmm. And so it's like trying to fix, needing to fix him if he is in a bad mood, even though it may have nothing to do with me. That probably came up the most. And then control for me came up really with a lot of people pleasing. Like in marriage, for example, how often we would be intimate could be one. That was a big example, especially after having kids, because our needs in terms of how often we maybe needed to be intimate would differ. But there was a time frame before we really did a lot of inner work on our own and together where we needed to have that intimate time, but maybe I hadn't taken the time for myself to take care of myself and really get into that mood. And instead of just saying, I'm not in the mood tonight, I maybe would just be intimate anyway, because I wanted him to be happy. I didn't want to upset him. I didn't want him to feel rejected. I was too scared to even have that conversation. Not that he ever hurt me or there was ever any forcing, right? But it's not even taking the time to check in with myself. It's wanting us to be okay so much so that I will try to control that environment emotionally by not even asking myself what I need in that moment.
Yeah. And on another side of the spectrum, I could see not trying to control your partner's perception of you, but also trying to control their behaviors too. Like they should be doing this. That's the way that it shows up for me. They should be acting this way, or they should be looking this way. Their hair needs to be fixed, or there's kind of control on multiple ends of the spectrum, and it can be wanting to. This is a strong word, and it's not necessarily that you're doing it intentionally, but manipulate the situation in some way to be different than what it is. And manipulation, of course, is there's all sorts of spectrums to that. So you're not doing it intentionally, but you're trying to control either your own actions, someone's perception of you, or somebody else's behavior. And I think that the root, of course, is if everything could just be in control, then I will feel safe. But is that what you found, that it was really this driver of something that was more of a fear of being unsafe or something bad happening?
Yeah, it would happen in arguments. Let's say there was a disagreement that we needed to work through. I was not a good listener. I would very much need to argue my point because I need you to see this my way. I need you to get where I'm coming from. I wasn't feeling heard. So I was really trying to control how that argument went or how that conversation went. You need to understand where I'm coming from. I can't even hear you. I don't even want to be told that there's another reality or another way of looking at this. I need to be understood. It very much showed up like that.
Yeah, that's helpful to hear another example of that. Second pillar is judgment. So, is this self-judgment, judgment of somebody else? Talk to me a little bit more about this and then how it's a signal that perfectionism is at play.
I mostly noticed a lot of judgment of myself. So I'll use my period as an example. So, you know how we usually need a lot of extra rest the few days leading up to when we start our cycle and when it first starts. But having a very overachieving perfectionist mentality, I'm like, no, I need to be go, 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 do, got to keep up with the house, got to get work done. So instead of allowing myself to rest, because if I did, I would judge myself, you should be doing more. And then let's say on top of that, maybe I saw my husband took a nap and then I would be judging him. You're going to sit there and take a nap, but yet I need a nap. Can't you see? Can't you see how badly I need a nap? When I would start to judge myself, there also comes this outer judgment. It's like this inner critic and there's an outer critic that's being really critical and judgmental of everything I'm doing. And then when left unchecked, it starts to spill into him and then the kids. And everything else.
So it's almost as if the judgment is this projection of an unmet need or an unmet ability to love the imperfections happening within yourself. And so then it gets cast onto that screen of a partner or kids or other people in your life because there's something internally that you're not slowing down enough to address and acknowledge. Does that feel true?
100%. It's really the perfect way of putting it. I don't know if you've done any reading or understanding of like internal family systems, but when you start to describe it, right, as there's an internal need that isn't being met, and that's when that inner judgment and then outer judgment starts to happen. That's very much what's happening. And I'm perceiving the fact that I need to rest as an imperfection, when really, if I just love that young part of myself that really just needs to maybe cuddle and watch TV with him or by myself or rest. If I were to just love and accept that part of myself and not allow it to mean anything negative about me, that's when that mean judge, that mean critic goes away for myself and for everyone around me.
Yeah, I think that's such a big piece of the puzzle is the acceptance internally can create more acceptance externally. Because I gave this example, I forget if it was in a client session or on another podcast recently, but like the dishes in the sink, for example, like it's not about the dishes in the sink, it's more just
there's some feeling of a need not being met. I just want to take a break from doing the chores, or I just want to be taken care of, or I just want to feel like someone goes above and beyond or something for me. So, but then now, instead of taking that and giving that inner version of me that love and that acceptance or the gift of some time to slow down and to rest and recharge, then it looks like this signal, beep, 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 my partner is doing something bad or wrong. And so then it becomes this whole cycle. And I'm sure you can resonate where it's like, you're frustrated with your partner, you're judging your partner, and then you judge yourself for being judgmental. And so it can create a whole ripple effect.
Yes. I love the dishes example. I really love the dishes example because really early on, before we even had kids, the dishes was a thing. It was a fight over the dishes. It wasn't about the dishes. It was the majority of the way I saw me being loved was acts of service. So I would not only do all these things for him to make him feel loved, but I would expect, without saying it, I would expect the same acts of service. So if I just did the dishes and then you come and put a dish in the sink, you just told me you don't love me. That's what you're saying to me. So to be able to recognize, oh, this is a need in me, I'm feeling like I wasn't considered. When you didn't put the dishes in the dishwasher, a simple act, I took it as you didn't consider me. So to take it a step further and actually be able to communicate that to your partner in a calm, non-attacking way, then at least for my husband to be like, oh, babe, I'm sorry. I didn't even realize that. Like, I'll take care of that. Like, thank you for doing the dishes. Mm-hmm. Avoiding that critical, not only of yourself, but the other person, it just allows you to actually be able to communicate these little things. So you actually aren't even fighting about the dishes because the dish thing is no longer even happening because you're opening up about it.
Exactly. It involves slowing down a little bit and becoming more regulated, which we'll get to later in the episode, I'm sure. But let's move through the last few signals of perfectionism being at play. So resentment, we just talked a little bit about that too, but is there anything different from the judgment piece that you wanted to add in about resentment?
The only thing I would add about resentment, and this started coming up, resentment, at least for me personally, and I'm going to just assume my opinion would be that this happens slowly over time in relationships, is resentment was really building up when there were specific needs that weren't being met consistently. And so when we would argue, all of that resentment that I had built up over feeling like he didn't know how to handle my emotions, he didn't know how to help me feel better in that moment because I didn't know how to do that for myself, I was resenting him more and more and more, getting to the point where every time we argued, I was thinking about divorce. When things were calm, I wasn't even considering it. But when we were fighting, I was like, if there were someone else would, it would have to be easier. It can't possibly feel this difficult. I just resented him so much for not understanding me. I didn't know that it was a lot of it. I didn't really understand myself at that time. And that was really hard to accept. Really, really hard to accept. It was a lot easier to put the blame on him.
Yeah, that's a common thought for a lot of people I know who experience relationship anxiety in the form that I did, which is, would it just be easier with someone else? But what I love that you just said, and I think it's such an important distinction, is I didn't even understand how to meet my needs myself. And sometimes we expect someone else outside of us to know us better than we know ourselves. And of course, when you hear it put like that, it's a little bit unfair. But I think that the movies have done a really great job of making us feel like that soulmate is out there that will get us and be the missing puzzle piece. But in order for the two puzzle pieces to fit together, those two puzzle pieces still have to be, this is an interesting metaphor, it's just coming out of my mouth as I say it, but the puzzle pieces have to be in their shapes and somewhat formed already in order to fit together. And it doesn't mean that you have to be a fully formed, healed person to be in a relationship. No, but like, if you don't at least understand a little bit about like how you are, what shape you are, and like what you're bringing into the relationship, how are you supposed to be able to share that and receive that from another person? So I think it's great that you mentioned that you expect maybe someone else would understand you better, but even if there was a different person, you would still have to be able to communicate and share and express who you are at your core.
Yeah. And once you make that realization, the next hurdle is learning how to do that in a way that doesn't feel attacking. that's the next thing that was really hard, is being able to communicate in a way that doesn't come across as confrontational and attacking of, hey, this really hurt. This specific need wasn't met. And here's how I need that need to be met. And can we come together to do this differently next time? Because there's stages to all of this. And I love how you said about the puzzle pieces. It almost made me think of, if you were putting a puzzle together, it's so much harder if you were doing it all upside down with no colors, right? Versus if you actually had all the puzzle pieces or most of them flipped over where you could see the colors and the shapes where they're supposed to fit together, it's easier for those two people to put that puzzle together versus doing it where you can't see any of the colors or shapes. All you have is just the way the puzzle pieces look shape-wise.
Yeah. Let's do a quick example of what you just shared, where that next step is to actually clearly communicate or to express something without it feeling like you're criticizing or attacking your partner. So let's take that emotional needs thread that you were pulling at earlier, where, okay, I don't feel like you met my emotional needs here. And maybe it was the need to feel reassured or to feel validated or to feel understood by your partner, which, yes, of course, your partner should be doing some of that, but also it's your job to help soothe and reassure yourself. So it's not 100% their role, but if they maybe disappointed you and missed the mark and you were trying to communicate, here's what I need next time, or here's what I felt wasn't helpful the last time, how would you go about that? So it is a little bit more of a opportunity to connect instead of start a disagreement.
Yeah, I love that question. So I, with other mentors, and this took a lot of research and practice, a lot of practice to learn. But what I started to do is, the first thing is I had to get clear on exactly what happened, right? In my mind, how did I see the situation? What is going on in my internal world? Meaning I had to first check in physically. So the first thing I do is, what physical state am I in? Do I have tension anywhere? Do I have tension in my neck? Do I have tension in my jaw? Am I breathing nice and relaxed? Or am I breathing really shallow? Does my chest feel tight? Because if my body does not feel fully relaxed, or at least most of the way relaxed, my nervous system is not calm. And that means I will not be able to think clearly. So I check in with my body. If it's not in that calm state, I use a practice, whether it's going for a walk or listening to music or journaling or meditating, or I really like bilateral binaural beats because they help both sides of your brain talk to each other to get out of that fear action, or some specific somatic exercises, which just means body. And while I'm doing those things, I'm really thinking through, okay, what emotions am I feeling? Okay, a lot of times I would tap into anger first. Anger was the emotion that was the easiest for me to tap into. Okay, well, I'm pissed. What am I pissed about? I'm mad about this and that. And I needed to express the anger. So if I'm walking, maybe I turn on angry music and I'm actually feeling the anger, right? And then if I actually feel it, a lot of times the sadness comes through. So then maybe I need to cry. Oh, okay. Underneath this frustration I have with him, actually, I feel like he just came back from a work trip recently, and I was just feeling like we weren't connecting the way that I needed. And I was doing all of these things to make his transition back home easier because he was on a time difference. So I was getting up early with the kids and I was doing all these things, which I was happy to do, but I was not taking care of myself and I didn't realize it. Mm-hmm. So I actually went to the beach. I listened to angry music on the way there. I let myself rage, ended up starting to cry, went out to the beach and just, okay. Right. So the first thing was I checked in with my body. I knew that I had a lot of tension that morning. I left the house. I felt the emotions. I identified what those emotions were and actually felt them. So once I realized which emotions were going on, what were the stories I was telling myself? And the stories I was telling myself is that I care about him more. I love him more because look at all these things I'm doing for him. And he doesn't care enough. He's not even paying attention enough to me to take care of me too. And being able to recognize that that's what I was thinking and doing something to take care of myself, and then going back to him and saying, hey, is now a good time to talk? Then, right, so that's one little piece, is check in with them before you just, okay, now's the time we're going to chat. And then having that conversation and allowing both people to share, okay, this was my reality. This is how it made me feel. And then allowing that other person, giving him the space to, and this took a lot of practices, allow him to validate my emotions, which did not come naturally. When you're breaking cycles like this, And if you're the first one to do it, at least in my experience, he did not automatically just know, okay, let me validate her emotions. And this is exactly what she needs. That took a lot of other practice. So I said a lot, but I'll just summarize it again by saying, first, check in with your body. What do you feel in your body? Then do something that helps you tap into what emotions you're having. And usually you need to physically do something, whether it's moving your body, dancing, listening to music, journaling, meditating, something. And then allow yourself to feel it. Even though it's really uncomfortable and you might want to run and hide from it, you need to feel that emotion. Throw a pillow on the ground, scream, whatever it is. Then you'll be able to figure out what the stories you've been telling yourself around that situation are, so you can clearly communicate that to your partner.
Yeah, I love it. I love that a lot of things I loved, but I'll try and share some of the ones that I think are most relevant is to start by tapping into the emotion, but not necessarily yet needing to explain it. Because I think a lot of people try to jump to intellectualizing, well, I'm pissed at my partner, so that means it would be easier with another person, or they're off to the races trying to assign the meaning. But in your example, you tapped into the anger and then the sadness before you checked in with yourself from a curious place of why might I be feeling that way? And so I think that's the important piece, because you're taking a little bit of time to regulate and slow down the thinking for a bit before jumping back in and turning that part of your brain online. So that's something I thought was really important to mention. And then the story I'm telling myself, I've always loved that phrase from Brené Brown. And I think it's such a helpful thing to bring into a conversation because, for example, with the dish example, if you're like, the story I'm telling myself was that you don't respect my time, you don't think of me, that's very different than saying you don't respect my time or you don't think of me. When you acknowledge this was my interpretation, I just wanted to share that, it takes a little bit of the blame game away. And so those were two key things. And one final question on this conversation about how to talk about it is, you mentioned that it's taken practice for you to have your husband validate your feelings. So was that something you had to specifically lay out and say, when we're having a conversation, I need you to share these types of responses with me? I think this is the type of stuff that doesn't get talked about often enough, is how do you actually get your need met from a partner, and how can you ask them if they're willing to meet the need? How clear do you have to be and spell it out?
In my experience, very clear. If that's not the way things have naturally been happening, and it's just not something that they maybe witnessed in maybe their parents' relationship, or maybe there's no other relationship where it's ever been modeled, I think that I assumed he should know. That was a story I said a lot, is like, he should know how to do this, especially because we've got like 3 kids, but that wasn't fair. So one, he used our kids to learn it, meaning kids are very emotional, right? And a kid is not going to sit there and listen to you say when they're having a tantrum, oh, but I didn't mean to upset you and did it. They just want a hug and they want to be validated, and that's it. And so we started just really having communication, and I had to specifically tell him, wow, I see how you did that right there. That was really helpful. And he started, I think some of it was a little bit of an accident. He started basically applying what worked with the girls to me, which is fair because it is the little girl in me who's really hurt in those moments. So if you can speak to that little girl and treat me like I'm just a sad little kid, not with words, but just loving me wholeheartedly, then my guard comes down. And so some of it was, actually, I'd say most of it was trial and error and positive reinforcement. So when there were things that really worked for me, I'm a big, big words of affirmation and gratitude person. So I made a very conscious effort with him to be like, thank you so much for handling me that way. That really helped me. And I think that helped him learn a lot quicker what did and didn't work with me.
Yeah, beautiful. And going back to that thought you had earlier, when you're like, every disagreement we had, the big D word comes out. Would it be easier with someone else? Do we have to get a divorce? And should I leave? I think my story in the past has been, it shouldn't be this hard. We shouldn't have to have these types of conversations. I shouldn't have to spell things out. If it was the right one, it would just all come together. But in your 20 years, it sounds like you've really been able to just do the work. And I know that phrase gets tossed around a lot, but do the work. And I'm sure it's been really challenging, but also really rewarding versus just being handed on a silver platter something that feels like it works so easily. So do you have any thoughts around that? I'm sure, again, it's been easier to grasp sometimes, and other times it's been really frustrating.
Yes. So two things. You asked really great questions and I really love them. So I'm going to thank you for that. So the first thing is when I started, and I learned this from a coach, when I started looking at every trigger that I had as a gift and an opportunity to learn more about myself and him, it really helped because I was like, okay, we're going to unlock another level. So every time we'd get through a big trigger, I would embrace it and use it as a learning opportunity. And the breakthroughs we would have afterwards, it felt like unlocking new levels of a video game, is how I've described it. Because repair and getting really good at repair, I don't think this gets talked about a ton. It really brings you a lot closer than if you just never have any ruptures. Never having any ruptures is not realistic. I think that's why a lot of people personally, in my opinion, struggle. They don't even want to have conflict in the first place because they see that as, I don't want to upset them. I don't want to have this fight. It's not worth it. But when you are willing to have the ruptures, you get really good at repair. So I now see it as us just leveling up. And this is going to sound really cliche or weird or whatever, but I just feel like our soul gets more and more connected to each other. Who we really are at our core just gets deeper and deeper connected. So our emotional and our physical connection has just gotten stronger and stronger and stronger through all of this. I wouldn't have said that a while ago, but getting through it, I can say that confidently now.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so important. Like there were, over the last 2 weeks, there were two, I would say, they're not huge. It's not like we're getting in screaming matches, but there were many ruptures where I had moments of feeling disconnected, or there was a little argument about the dishes or like not cleaning up. Ironically, actually, I left a mess before the Super Bowl party that we were having and just didn't pick it up. And then Nate was like, what is going on over here? So I will just lay that card and just say, hey, I was the one that actually was being a little bit messy and sloppy. But regardless, the root of that was actually him feeling like I wasn't respecting this space. And it really helped me to hear that that's what was coming from him. But then there was another time a couple weeks ago where I was feeling disconnected and really craving more quality time. And funny enough, I'm about to make a post on Instagram today. By the time this is live, it will have already been posted, but how our definitions of quality time were just so off. I was really upset because I felt we weren't spending enough quality time. And he was like, we're spending so much quality time together. We do this and do that. And I was like, okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. We need to slow down. What is your definition of quality time? And he was like, any time that we spend together. And I was just like, oh my gosh, that's really sweet. But no, that's not my definition. And the inner perfectionist in me is like, no, it has to be this grand quality time. But realistically, I know it doesn't have to be this huge romantic gesture of time. It's just about putting the phones down, putting the TV away, going out and doing an activity. And an idea that we actually just started is doing alphabet dating. So we're going to go on dates that are each letter of the alphabet inspired. So A was Air and Space Museum. B, we're going to do bubbly and back massages. That is the type of quality time I'm looking for where it feels intentional. So I just think it's so important to be able, like you said, to have that rupture, because otherwise you're not repairing and you're not coming back to the table and having that deeper connection. And so I'm really glad you brought that point in.
Yeah, I just think it's necessary. And I think any couple that has been together for any length of time, it's inevitable for you to have ruptures. And until you're willing to have those ruptures to give you the opportunity to repair, I just feel people just drift farther and farther apart. And I really love what you said about the quality time thing, because that's so accurate. Men's brains and women's brains are very different in what we see as connection, and then just two different human beings on what we see as connecting. And so long as both of you agree, both of you feel that quality time spent is what you needed, that's what's important for us. It could be that we're scrolling Instagram reels together and laughing at them together instead of being separate on our phone, even if we were sitting next to each other, right? Looking at our own phones. That to me isn't quality time. But if we were sitting there together for 30 minutes away from the kids, looking at the same things, laughing at the same things, that makes me feel connected. So it can be very small things. It really doesn't have to be big.
Yeah, I totally agree. Same page with you. It just needs to be something that we're sharing and doing together. Love that. Okay. Yeah. Let's get through these last two. I mean, we've covered so much already, but I'm excited to cover these last two as well. So the fourth one is a signal that perfectionism could be at play is when there's fear coming up. So how did you notice this, or what is common that you see when fear and perfectionism are connected?
So, I mean, a lot of it all ties together, right? With a lot of what we talked about, but fear for me could be in the sense that, I mean, there's two things. One could be fear that if I bring up this issue, that it's going to cause a big enough rupture that maybe because there used to be a lot of silent treatment for us. He might go silent for days where we wouldn't talk while figuring things out. And so it could be fear to even have the conversation of an issue. The other thing that for me comes up a lot is fear with feeling like safe and secure, not in the sense of physically, but money is a big one. Mm-hmm. Meaning, obviously, the economy is crazy right now. And I've been having a change in my career, kind of shifting from the PA life over to coach life because I was burning out with the way I was doing things. And having talks about money and us feeling secure with money, because for me, and I think for a lot of people, they've equated money with safety. And that's a very scary subject. It can be a very scary subject to talk about, and very perfectionistic too, right? I need to control the situation, or I'm very afraid to talk about it. That causes a lot of physical symptoms to come up. So I would say those are the big things that I notice personally with fear.
Yeah, definitely. I would say whether it's money or career or relationship related, the inner perfectionist wants to make sure, like you said, that everything is buttoned up and that you're doing the right thing and that everyone else around you is doing the right thing. And so when things are not going, quote, quote, perfectly as we've expected them to, or if it doesn't match our expectations in reality, they don't match up, then that's, I think, a big reason that fear comes up. I know it is a lot of the reason why people have relationship anxiety. So thanks for bringing that one in. And then prioritizing your needs last, this was the fifth pillar, but I feel we gave such good examples of this already, where you're judging or feeling that resentment because you haven't taken that time to meet your core needs. So it feels like we covered that one already, but let me know if there was anything else that you wanted to bring into that.
I think just on a very basic note, is it ties into how your body is working and the state of your nervous system. So on a very basic level, if you aren't hydrated, if you have gone for hours and hours without eating, if you have not slept well, your very basic needs, you're highly likely going to get into that critical, judgmental, not happy with yourself, not happy with your partner mode. So that would be the only thing that I would add to that category, aside from what we already talked about.
Yeah, it's those basic fundamental human needs of sleep and food. And I've been studying a lot about this lately too, is even something so simple of intermittent fasting. I used to think that was good for everybody. And then I'm realizing because of women's cycles and women's hormones, that is actually maybe not as helpful for everybody. It can be for some people. I don't want to pretend that I'm the expert on the subject, but things like that, it's like, no, actually, when I eat breakfast, I feel so much more able to show up for myself in a regulated way throughout the day. So little things like that, that could actually be big deals of the basic human needs. And then of course the emotional needs too. But if you're not able to prioritize or understand what your core needs are, then of course there's going to be things that are feeling like they're not met in other categories of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think fasting is definitely a big one, and definitely safe to say that intermittent fasting with women, when they're doing it, there is a timing of the cycle where there's parts of the cycle where it can be really helpful. There's parts of the cycle where it will interrupt the hormones. And so hormone production is all related to, you know, your happy chemicals and all that stuff. So it does tie in a lot.
Yeah. I do want to do an episode at some point on the cycle and how it affects our month as women who experience the cycle, just because I know it brings up so much for a lot of people. So, all right, a couple last things here before we close out. So you've already touched on this a bit, but I know that when we are dysregulated, it can affect how we're showing up in our relationship. So you gave some examples earlier of the journaling and the music, but are there basic nervous system tools that are on the spot that help you get regulated, like certain breathing techniques you do or certain types of movement? Like, how are you taking a beat to pause and soothe and regulate when you notice the clenched shoulders or the tightness in your chest or whatever other symptoms are coming up?
Yeah, I mean, there's ones you can practice for certain emotions. With anger, I think an easy one would be whether you have a little hand towel, twisting that hand towel, or going against the wall and kind of pushing against the wall. A really easy one I really like, if you just like, I feel totally dysregulated, I don't know why, I know that I'm tense everywhere, actually doing a full body clench, meaning taking a deep breath in and tensing every part of your body throughout that whole deep breath in, and then relaxing it on the out breath and doing that a handful of times, can be really calming and regulating. An easy breath one that you can do, or I'll give you two, is the boxed breathing, right? Where you take a big breath in for four counts, you hold it for four counts, you exhale for four counts, you hold that breath out for four counts, and you just repeat that little box cycle. And then just even humming stimulates the vagus nerve, which is that nerve that tells your body that you're safe and that everything is okay. And it calms down that hyperactivity. So those are the quick ones that I tend to tap into.
Love it. Yeah, I have done over the last maybe 6 months or so, I've been trying to incorporate more yoga nidra into my routine. And and one of the guided videos, Ali Boothroyd on YouTube is one of my favorites for that. But she does, in one of the starts of her videos, she has you do the full body clench and breathe. And it's so surprising how much it actually releases some of that stress and tension in your body. I really like doing that.
That's definitely one of my favorite ones. I've touted this a lot on my Instagram, and I think I've shared it with you before, but I am a huge fan of the Workout Witch on Instagram. She's got some really awesome, her program is pretty affordable, and she walks you through a step-by-step, very brief little exercises to do every day for like 30, 60, 90 days. I had a lot of shifts happen with just implementing that in my life. And I go back to some of those exercises regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've definitely mentioned that to me before, but I'm really glad you're sharing it with those listening. And I have still yet to check that out, but it's a reminder to me after this. I think I'm going to get the base course now because I think it's under 100, you said, but it walked you through so many good tools and resources.
Yeah. You can get the 10% off too if you use the Medical Perfectionist, whatever you purchase, you get 10% off of, which, but I love it. I'm obsessed.
Amazing. Well, my final two questions, something I ask everybody, because this is the You Love and You Learn podcast. What is one thing that you have learned about love that you would want to leave listeners with?
Love can be incredibly healing in a way that isn't in the movies. It's not like how they talk about in the movies, but love can just be a way to make you see parts of yourself that you haven't accepted before, and you learn how to accept. And the deeper you love yourself, the more you're capable of loving someone else.
Yeah, beautiful. I've found both of those to be true. And I used to go against that whole notion of you can't love yourself before you love someone else. And I still believe that it's a little bit black or white. Of course, you can still love someone else if you don't fully love yourself. But I will say the more that you love yourself, of course, the more love you can give and receive from others. So I think it's such a beautiful sentiment. And final question is, where can people stay connected with you?
So I'm on Instagram at the Medical Perfectionist. So that's really where you can find me. That's the main place for right now, is at the Medical Perfectionist.
Beautiful. Instagram. Well, thank you so much, Kayla. It was great to chat with you.
Thank you so much. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everyone. See you in the next one.
Thank you so much for listening to the You Love and You Learn podcast. If you've been enjoying the podcast, it would mean the absolute world to me if you could rate and review the podcast, because the more ratings and reviews there are, the more people that can hear this message. And it's really important to me to get this message out to the world and to create a space where people can learn about love and relationships in a way that is not judgmental, in a way that helps them expand their perspective from the cultural narratives that we've heard and seen in the movies and in Hollywood and the media. And the more ratings and reviews that are there, the more people that can hear this message. So thank you again so much. It really means the world to me that you are listening, and see you in the next episode.